Welcome. You are listening to Aftersight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Thank you for joining us for the Arapaho County News, read by Tim Elliott. This is being recorded on May 18, 2024. Today we will be reading the following main articles. Man seeking revenge for stolen phone pleads guilty to fire fatal to Green Valley Ranch family, by Colleen Slevin, Associated Press. Aurora police make arrest in 2022 case of man found fatally shot in an alley, by the Sentinel. Autistic children and their families recovering after alleged assaults on Littleton school bus, by Elizabeth Slay. Centennial OKs ADU measure as similar state bill is passed, by Susie Glassman. How Colorado's medication collection boxes aim to increase safety, by Haley Lena. Colorado partners with driving schools to educate teens about cannabis-impaired driving, also by Haley Lena. And following up with miscellaneous articles. Man seeking revenge for stolen phone pleads guilty to fire fatal to Green Valley Ranch family. A Colorado man pleaded guilty to murder charges on Friday for starting a 2020 house fire that killed five members of a Senegalese family out of misplaced revenge for a stolen iPhone that he mistakenly tracked to the house. Kevin Bowie, now 20, was a teenager at the time of the fire, but prosecuted as an adult. He has been portrayed by prosecutors as the ringleader of three friends who started the August 5, 2020 fire in the middle of the night in Green Valley Ranch. Bowie wrongly believed people who had recently robbed him lived in the home after using an app to track his stolen iPhone to the general area, according to prior testimony in the case. Bowie pleaded guilty to two counts of second-degree murder. A plea deal reached between the defendant and prosecutors proposes a sentence of up to 60 years in prison, 30 years for each count. The maximum penalty for each count of second-degree murder is 48 years and a $1 million fine. Judge Karen Brody sent sentencing for July 2nd. Bowie was seated at the table with his lawyers during the hearing, with his hands cuffed in front of him and wearing a green jail uniform. He gave perfunctory answers to the judge's questions as his parents watched from the court gallery and listened to the proceedings as relayed by an interpreter through headphones. Bowie's father told reporters after the hearing that they accepted the plea agreement. No relatives of the victims appear to be present in court. Bowie is the last of the three friends to enter a plea in the fire that killed Jibril Dial, 29, and Adja Dial, 23, and their 22-month-old daughter, Khadija Dial. Their relative, Hassan Dial, 25, and her 6-month-old daughter, Hawa Bey, were also killed. Three other people escaped by jumping from the second floor of the home, breaking some bones. One of the counts of, and I quote, second murder that Bowie pleaded guilty to was for killing Jibril and Adja Dial and their child. The other is for killing Hassan Dial and her baby. 60 other charges Bowie had faced, including attempted murder, arson, and burglary, were dropped by prosecutors under the plea deal. Last year, Dylan Siebert, who was 14 at the time of the fire, was sentenced to 3 years in juvenile detention and 7 years in a state prison program for young inmates. He pleaded guilty to second-degree murder under a deal that prosecutors and the defense said balanced his lesser role in planning the fire, his remorse and interest in rehabilitation, with the horror of the crime. In March, Gavin Seymour, 19, was sentenced to 40 years in prison after pleading guilty to one count of second-degree murder. Seymour and Bowie pleaded guilty after a failed effort to get the internet search history evidence that led to their arrests thrown out. The investigation of the fire dragged on for months without any leads. Surveillance video showed three suspects wearing full face masks and dark hoodies. Fears that the blaze had been a hate crime led many Senegalese immigrants to install security cameras at their homes in case they could also be targeted. Without anything else to go on, police eventually obtained a search warrant asking Google for which IP addresses had searched the home's address within 15 days of the fire. Five of the IP addresses found were based in Colorado, and police obtained the names of those people through another search warrant. After investigating those people, police eventually identified Bowie, Seymour, and Siebert as suspects. They were arrested about 5 months after the fire. In Colorado, the Colorado Supreme Court upheld the search of Google users' keyword history, an approach that critics have called a digital dragnet that threatens to undermine people's privacy and their constitutional protections against unreasonable searches and seizures. However, the court cautioned it was not making a broad proclamation on the constitutionality of such warrants and emphasized it was ruling on the facts of just this case. Aurora police make arrest in 2022 case of man found fatally shot in an alley. Aurora police say they've made an arrest in a two-year-old fatal shooting case that led them to a suspect already in a Denver jail. Police said Lou Ray, 22, is responsible for the 2022 shooting death of Ricardo Ryans, 44, found dead in an alley near the border of Northwest Aurora and Denver. The incident began on the afternoon of May 30, 2022, when police were notified of a man lying in the alley between the 1600 block of Willow and Xanthia Streets in Denver. Denver police identified the man as Ryans, reporting he had sustained multiple gunshot wounds. He was declared dead at the scene. A few hours later, someone called Denver police to report possible trouble in a car near the intersection of East 14th Avenue and Niagara Street. When officers responded, they noticed multiple bullet holes in the vehicle and blood in the front passenger seat. Aurora police spokesperson Joe Moyland said in a statement, witnesses told officers they saw a woman exit the vehicle and enter a nearby motel. Denver police located the woman. She told investigators she had picked up Ryans in Aurora earlier and was en route to a local business as part of an errand. As they were driving away from the business, they encountered a white sedan driving slowly with its hazard lights on Near East 16th Avenue and Alton Street, police said. The woman attempted to drive around the sedan when an unknown man appeared and fired multiple rounds into the passenger side of her car. The woman said she sped away and pulled into an alley between Willow and Xanthia Streets in Denver to check on Ryans. Ryans exited the car and collapsed on the ground, Moyland said. The woman then drove to the motel where she was staying, parking the vehicle about two blocks away. Aurora and Denver police pieced the shooting together. Aurora police determined where the shooting scene was, recovering several 9mm shell casings. Aurora investigators pursued the case for the last 2 years, Moyland said. Police tabbed Ray as a suspect after obtaining witness statements along with forensic and ballistic evidence, police said. Ray was already in custody at the Denver County Jail on an unrelated 2022 Denver homicide, police said, when he was notified by Aurora police of potential charges in the Ryans case. Police said they could not divulge details of the case at this time, but that the shooting was not random. To help address teens' mental health needs, Colorado to launch Youth Mental Health Corps by Melanie Asmar, and Chalkby, Colorado. Colorado is one of four states set to launch a new public-private program this fall aimed at addressing both the growing mental health needs of teenagers and a lack of providers. Called the Youth Mental Health Corps, the program will train young adults ages 18 to 24 to act as navigators serving middle and high school students in schools and in community-based organizations, according to a press release from Colorado Lieutenant Governor Diana Primavera's office. The Youth Mental Health Corps website says Corps members will Connect youth to needed mental health supports and resources in close collaboration with practitioners and community partners. The federal AmeriCorps Service Program will work with the Colorado Behavioral Health Administration and the Colorado Community College System to recruit and deploy the navigators, who will get a stipend and be eligible for student loan forgiveness and other help paying for college, the press release says. By joining this national initiative, we are not only addressing the urgent need for mental health resources, but also creating meaningful pathways for our young adults to pursue careers in this vital field, Primavera said in a statement. Children's Hospital Colorado declared a pediatric mental health state of emergency in 2021. And both public agencies and private organizations in the state responded with programs to address the crisis. The programs include the pandemic-era state-funded iMatter, which provides 6 free telehealth or in-person counseling sessions to students in elementary through high school, and which Colorado lawmakers recently made permanent. The Schultz Family Foundation, founded by former Starbucks CEO Howard Schultz and his wife Sherry, and the online platform Pinterest, are backing the Youth Mental Health Core Program, according to a press release from AmeriCorps. The press release mentions broad concern about the impact of social media on the mental health of young people, and says the Youth Mental Health Core will help students navigate social changes online, such as harassment, bullying, and bias. Colorado, Michigan, Minnesota, and Texas will launch Youth Mental Health Core programs in September with hundreds of navigators across the 4 states, the press release says. 7 other states, California, Iowa, Maryland, New Jersey, New York, Virginia, and Utah, are set to launch programs in the fall of 2025, it says. Autistic children and their families recovering after alleged assaults on Littleton school bus. Loving, happy, and larger than life are words 3 parents use when they describe their autistic sons. The boys are non-speaking and use devices or other methods to communicate, including their behaviors, which showed stark changes in recent months, such as self-injuring moments and meltdowns. The parents of Dax Vestal, Andrew McBride, and Hunter Yarbrough share similar stories. They say their children began to act differently about 6 months ago and believe the shift is linked to how former Littleton Public Schools bus paraprofessional Kiara Jones treated them as they rode to and from the Joshua School in Inglewood. Jones is facing 11 charges of child assault and abuse, with prosecutors alleging mistreatment of autistic children. Her arraignment is set for July 1st. The families told the Inglewood Herald how they and their children are now coping with trauma as they watch the criminal case proceed amid ongoing questions about how Littleton Public Schools leadership has handled the situation. A shift in behavior. Jessica Vestal describes her son, 10-year-old Dax, as an affectionate, loving, smiling, giggling boy who would always wake up in the best mood. Dax rode Littleton Public Schools bus L76 with Jones to Joshua School, which teaches children with autism, spectrum disorder, and developmental disabilities. A video from mid-March that appears to show Jones striking Dax went viral in early April. After her arrest on April 4th, LPS released a letter to the district stating Jones was fired in mid-March. Inglewood police charged Jones with a single child assault charge and recently added 10 more child assault and abuse charges. Vestal said prior to Jones' arrest, her family thought Dax was entering a new phase of autism because some different behaviors were emerging, such as high-severity meltdowns and self-injurious behaviors, or SIBs. So when all of this started 6 months ago, We thought he was just kind of changing as a person, Vestal said. Dr. Amanda Kelly, president and CEO of Firefly Autism, a Denver facility that provides educational and other services to the autism community, said it's hard to generalize behaviors because people and their experiences are different. At Firefly, there are also individuals who are non-speaking, and when staffers notice students displaying an exasperation of current behaviors, it can be an indicator that something is wrong. I think if there is consistent patterns of behavioral excess, so increases in either current behaviors or behaviors that have not been seen before, and a very qualified clinical team has done everything in their power to understand how and why these things are happening, and there's no good explanation, then I do think there is obviously thinking outside the box in terms of what else might be happening, Kelly said. Kelly pointed to a similar case involving a Firefly student who was abused on a St. Vrain Valley School District bus that contracted with Firefly in 2017. A bus paraprofessional and bus driver were convicted of second-degree assault of an at-risk person, third-degree assault and failure to report abuse and exploitation of an at-risk person. The school district settled a nearly $4 million lawsuit filed by the victim's family. To help people understand how Dax communicates, Vestal compares his experience to a hypothetical situation involving her daughter who can speak. If she was abused by a teacher, she could tell me that, and if I wasn't listening to her or I couldn't hear her or something like that, she would keep having to tell me, Vestal said. With Dax, his severe behavioral change was his mode of communication, and so now that I've heard him and I've received the message, those behaviors have really fallen off. Blake McBride, father of Andrew, also 10 years old, said his son is a movie buff who is a quiet guy who loves to be around everybody. When you see him, he's got this infectious smile, and he's our world, McBride said. Similar to Dax, Andrew started displaying behaviors that didn't align with his personality. Though he is doing better, he continues to struggle, McBride said. There's more outburst as far as his SIBs, self-injurious behaviors, are concerned, McBride said. He also tends to not take to anyone talking in our van. There's more of these outbursts that he's just mad. McBride said it's difficult because Andrew can't tell him what he's experienced, and no one else can provide that insight either. Kevin Yarbrough is the father of 11-year-old Hunter Yarbrough, who also rode bus L-76. He said Hunter is a happy kid who is larger than life. He loves to joke around, Yarbrough said. He loves to play around. He loves to be tickled, tries his best on his talker, a device he uses to communicate, to relay his emotions and tell you what he wants. The father of three said the family noticed changes in Hunter when he was riding the bus and after he stopped riding it. Hunter has self-injurious behaviors that had been, over the last couple of years, doing a lot better, Yarbrough said. That was the first thing that we noticed, is that the SIBs just escalated very quickly. It happened around the time we were about to get on the bus. Yarbrough said Hunter is doing better now that he's not taking the bus to school. Obviously, we'd love for him to one day have the experience of riding the bus and getting that little freedom away from his parents. But it's going to be a while before we can really do that, or maybe even convince him to do that, Yarbrough said. Dax, Andrew, Hunter, and other students on bus L-76 were removed by their parents from the route in March after Vestal discovered Jones was allegedly harming Dax. That's when the parents met with Joshua School, Vestal said. The Path to Healing. Kelly, from Firefly Autism, said the best thing parents can do to help the healing process is to support their children Help them avoid certain triggers and connect them with resources. I think understanding the specific trauma that the person experienced is key, and very crucial is getting help from a professional if you're not sure how to handle that or what to do, Kelly said. Dax is still healing, but now that he's been heard, he doesn't need to communicate so fiercely, Vestal said. That hurt and that trauma is still there to process, but so much of that behavior has fallen off. Because we got the message and now he's safe again, Vestal said. Overall, Dax is himself again, Vestal added, but feels he is at square one in the healing process. Dax's parents now drive him to Joshua School, and he is back to enjoying his time there. He loves the school, and he loves his routine there, and everybody there has been great about babying him and catering to whatever he wants in the moment to let him know he's safe and he doesn't have to get back on the bus, Vestal said. McBride said the family drives Andrew to school, and he seems to be more at ease. There's smiles on his face when he sees me or Mom picking him up from school or dropping him off, McBride said. It doesn't seem so, for lack of a better word, traumatizing. So we're still dealing with a lot of behavior that I think has a lot to do with what's gone on in the past. McBride said he and his family are working to help Andrew heal with doctors and therapists, and they hope going forward that he can find peace and normalcy again. I want him to feel like no matter what happens with this situation, he has parents that are out there fighting for him. And even though he can't say what he wants to say right now, that his parents are there fighting for him every day, and we won't go silently, McBride said. Hunter's family is also helping him through the healing process with therapy and feel there's been a big shift since he's been off the bus. Yarbrough said he hopes Hunter will trust going out into the world again. We'd love to actually have him get back on a bus, or we'd love to have him have something where he can feel like he has a little bit of independence, Yarbrough said. Next steps. The families are working with Rafah Mohammadbai Law Firm, including during this criminal proceedings involving Jones. Lawyer Qusair Mohammadbai said the firm has put the school district on notice about possible civil legal action. Vestal feels LPS has not properly addressed the situation. A lot of times within things like this happen, there's a criminal investigation, there's a lawsuit, and then it kind of fizzles out, Vestal said, adding that she is determined to fight and believes the issue is systematic. Vestal added that these types of cases aren't exclusive to Colorado. There are similar investigations taking place in other states. So we are very determined to not let this have happened in vain and to make sure all of our kids and all kids like them that come behind us are safe on their bus, Vestal said. In a letter the district sent on April 5th to the families of LPS students who ride bus L76 to the Joshua School and other parents in the district, LPS said Jones was hired in August 2023 after satisfactory reference checks and after passing a thorough background check. She had very limited access to students during her employment with LPS, the letter continued. She has had no contact with students since March 19th, the day her employment was terminated. The parents said they have not been formally or directly contacted by the district since April 5th. McBride said the parents want to make a difference at a national level. As devastating as this whole situation is, this has gone on too long, and for this community to be so vulnerable and nobody to really pay attention to it, we need to get out there and put some safeguards in for these kiddos, McBride said. He said there needs to be more training for paraprofessionals and aides, better hiring practices, better cameras on the buses, and a better review process of these situations. It doesn't seem like what we're asking for is too difficult to get going, McBride said. Kelly said in Firefly's case, Staffers were meticulous in collecting data and observing students when they got on and off the bus. Everybody just was really careful about making sure they kept really tight data on what was happening. And then, of course, we were alerted by the police that there was an investigation that was launched, Kelly said. Kelly said she hopes this type of abuse and trauma isn't common, but this is the third case she has heard about in Colorado. I just don't understand why this happens, Kelly said. This is the most vulnerable population that we have, so I have to believe that maybe it's more common than we would allow ourselves to believe. McBride said he hopes for a world where people like Andrew are safe everywhere. It's more than just the buses and how they're getting there, McBride said. We need to make sure that as their parents, things are going the way that they should be going. Yarbrough also hopes for change and for people to really understand how challenging all of this is. Most parents see this and realize it's heartbreaking and realize they wouldn't want this to happen to their kid. But most of the parents and their kid would be able to tell them if something happened on the school bus, Yarbrough said. We're trying to learn through behaviors of what actually happened and having to try and read feelings. Centennial OK's ADU measure has similar state bill is passed. Centennial homeowners Kyle and Elizabeth Cotney now have the option to build an in-law suite on their property so their parents can live comfortably and affordably as they age. The city's mayor and council voted 9-0 to pass an ordinance allowing the construction of accessory dwelling units, or ADUs, as long as they meet regulations outlined in the plan. For the Cotneys, who expressed their family support for ADUs during public comment at the meeting, the approval brings a sense of relief. It means their parents can retain their independence while having family nearby who can support them. It also means their children can spend more time with their grandparents, strengthening the intergenerational bond between them. Thank you for advancing this ordinance so that families like ours no longer have to live in this limbo and can reassure our aging relatives that there is a dignified, independent option where they can age close to family, said Kyle. Not everyone supports the idea for Centennial. Patrick Larzik told the council ADUs would destroy the neighborhoods. It's not going to be the neighborhood that I'd want to move into again, said Lazarick. If I have apartment houses on both sides of me because that's what it's going to turn into, you might as well just build the projects. Even if the council had defeated the ordinance, it seems ADUs are inevitable, not just in Centennial, but in many populated parts of Colorado. The Colorado legislature passed a bill last week requiring municipalities with more than 1,000 people and portions of counties with greater than 10,000 to allow one ADU per single-family detached home. Property owners will have to seek approval for the addition according to the jurisdiction's guidelines. Centennial Mayor Stephanie Pico acknowledged that the state requirement supersedes the city's decision, but said having an ordinance in place prior to the governor signing the ADU is the best defense that we have going forward. Even if our ADU bill isn't perfect, we can change ours, she added. Pico stressed that city planners and council members would listen to homeowners as the law goes into effect and, if necessary, change the regulations outlined in the ordinance. ADUs are defined as a second, subordinate dwelling on the same lot as the primary residence, with a separate entrance, kitchen, and bathroom. They can be attached to the house, like in a basement or an addition, or detached, like in a backyard cottage or separate garage. To pass Centennial's approval, the ADU must receive a building permit, follow municipal code, not be a temporary structure or an RV. Fit within existing setbacks, the area from the property line or house to the structure. fit within the maximum lot coverage, be smaller than 50% of the footprint of the main home, have a maximum height of 17 feet, match external features to the main home, provide one off-street parking space, have a separate address from the main home. Homeowners and civic associations can enforce stricter regulations or ban ADUs through their private covenants. Each council member acknowledged the time and thought that went into developing the regulations and said that while many had reservations initially, they now believe the city is ready for the change. "We didn't do this overnight or quickly," said Councilman Don Sheehan. "We've been contemplating the impact of ADUs on your neighborhoods and houses, and we've got professionals who have really spent a lot of time working on this ordinance. I think we've covered a lot of areas. If we have something we've missed or something that has become a chronic issue, we'll fix it." Where did those red, blue, and black Colorado license plates come from? A look at the history of some of the state's unique plate designs. By Ellis Arnold. Ambiguous image in Colorado. The state's standard license plate features an artsy depiction of white mountains against a green background. So in all red, all blue, and all black designs with white letters, without mountains, started popping up in traffic, you probably took notice. In 2023, roughly 180,000 vehicles were registered with those seemingly new plates. But the plates actually have roots in the past, and the once discontinued designs raise money for people with disabilities. The first blue and white plate was issued in 1914, the Colorado Division of Motor Vehicles said in a statement, adding, "The first year the all-red background with white letters was issued was 1925. Colorado's popular new black plate is modeled after a 1945 design, predating the state's first plate design with mountains by about 15 years, according to the state DMV. Another retro plate that flips the standard design, instead offering green mountains and white sky, recently made a return. It, too, generates funds for programs for the disability community. Colorado's batch of reissued designs represents just one of the many ways to support a cause or send a message. Our choice in license plates reflects things we love to do, organizations we support, our service, our hobbies and interest, and provides financial support to these organizations, DMV Senior Director Electra Bustle said in a news release this year. Here's a look at the history of some of Colorado's unique license plates. Bringing it back, Colorado's first made available the now retro-looking plate with green mountains and white sky in 1962, the state DMV said. Colorado discontinued that plate design in 2000, the division said. Bringing it back was an effort of a state Senate bill in 2021. A law that requires the state to charge additional fees for those plates and put them in a disability support fund. State lawmakers in 2022 followed up with State Senate Bill 22-217, a law that allowed Colorado to issue the previously retired designs of all black, all red, and all blue backgrounds. The Colorado Disability Funding Committee receives $25 from the sale of each of those plates, as well as an additional $25 at renewal, the state DMV said. The DMV does not have historical records that point to the reasons why the state discontinued the black, red, and blue plates years ago, the division said. Black and white and black color combinations, as well as a host of other color combinations, were used from 1913 through 1958. The final version of the black and white color combination was issued in 1954, the DMV said in a statement. Around 1959, the state moved to various versions of green and white license plates, the DMV said. Colorado first made available its current standard license plate design of white mountains and green background around 1960, according to the DMV. retro plates gain popularity. Now that some old designs are back, they're becoming popular. Coloradans choose the black plates roughly 170,000 times in 2023, according to a DMV list. About 6,900 vehicles registered with the red plates and about 6,400 with the blue that year, the list said. The black background in particular exceeded original revenue estimates, while the blue and red backgrounds have met estimates, a state budget document said. The state made the black, red, and blue plates available in January 2023. Themed plates including for ethnic groups. The Columbine Respect Life design remains popular too, with more than 75,000 vehicles registered with the plates in 2023. Released in 2001, the plate honors the 13 lives lost during the shooting at Columbine High School in 1999, according to the DMV. While the plate design was created to recognize the victims of the Columbine tragedy, it does not generate funds for survivors of the shooting, the DMV clarified. Some plates center on ethnic groups. The Italian American Heritage plate was created from a state house bill in 2007. The American Indian Scholars plate was created from a state Senate bill in 2005, the DMV said. For that plate, a person must donate $25 to the Rocky Mountain Indian Chamber of Commerce. And now, a bill to create a plate that supports the Chicana/O community, Americans of Mexican descent, recently passed the state legislature. After it's created, a person would become eligible for the plate by providing a certificate confirming they have made a donation to a nonprofit organization chosen by officials based on the organization's provision of services to the Latin American community, according to a summary of the bill on the legislature's website. It speaks to Chicano heritage that is very deep in the state of Colorado, State Representative Tim Hernandez has said. How Colorado's medication collection boxes aim to increase safety. A couple of times a year, drivers might see a sign on the side of the road with bold letters that state, "Prescription Drug Take Back," and to take part by bringing unused or expired medications to their local police department. What they might not know is that there is a free and convenient way to properly dispose of medications year-round. Just as the Douglas County Sheriff's Office and the Douglas County Health Department partner with the state to offer a safe way for residents to discard prescriptions and medications, the Parker Police Department also takes part in the semi-annual take-back days. When we did them, we had a line the entire 2 hours that we held the event, said Josh Hans, spokesperson for the Parker Police Department. Like other areas in the county, the department saw a high demand for the service, said Hans, leading them to the decision to work with the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment and put a medication collection box in the lobby of their department. Importance of proper disposal. In 2016, the CDPHE established a Household Medication and Sharps Take Back program. Bright green metal boxes are located throughout the county to accept and destroy unused or expired over-the-counter and prescription medications generated by households. We don't want children or young adults to have access to expired or no longer needed medications, Jeff Staltler with the Division of Environmental Health and Sustainability for the CDPHE said. About 47% of teens say it's easy to get prescription drugs from a parent's medicine cabinet. According to the U.S. Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, an agency within the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Since the start of the program, more than 232,000 pounds of household medications has been collected, about 16,600 pounds in the first year, said Stalter, and there was a 23% increase in the 2022 fiscal year. These figures parallel what is being seen in Douglas County. Some weeks, we empty the box twice because we have so much medication that's dropped off, said Hans. Douglas County and the state encourage residents not to flush or rinse their medications down a drain as it can potentially affect water and natural resources. Peter Bong, the director of water and water treatment operations at the Centennial Water and Sanitation District, says flushing these substances puts compounds in the treatment plants that are challenging to remove. By not flushing them down the drain, they don't get into the wastewater plant and have the risk of getting to the rivers or streams, said Bong. The concern is that the water can eventually get back in the drinking water system farther downstream. However, the Federal Drug and Food Administration has a list of certain products that can be flushed, which can be found at https://shorturl.at/rwxy1. Medication collection boxes. There are 16 medication take-back boxes in Douglas County, and all accept prescribed controlled substances such as Vicodin, Xanax, and Percocet. A licensed and certified drug enforcement agency consultant picks up the medications at least monthly, and the medications are incinerated. What they can't drop off are obviously illicit materials, chemotherapy drugs, medical tools, and supplies or any infectious waste, Stalter said. These include marijuana, LSD, needles, syringes, thermometers, and personal care products. Outside of those, including over-the-counter vitamins, old Advil, and those could all be dropped off, Stalter said. The State Department encourages people to conserve space in the collection boxes by pouring pills and capsules into a Ziploc bag and recycling the containers separately. They added that it's important to strike out personal information that may be on pill containers. A map of these locations can be found on the CDPHE website or on the My Colorado app. Castle Rock. Castle Rock Police Department, located at 100 Perry Street. CVS Pharmacy, located at 4050 Future Street. Kaiser Permanente, inside the lobby, located at 4318 Trail Boss Drive. Safeway Pharmacy, located at 880 South Perry Street. Castle Pines. Walgreens, located at 7370 Loggy Road. Highlands Ranch. Douglas County Sheriff's Office, Highlands Ranch Substation, located past security next to the reception desk at 9250 Zotos Drive. Kaiser Permanente, inside the lobby, located at 9285 Hepburn Street. Safeway Pharmacy, located at 9255 South Broadway. Walgreens, located at 6650 Timberline Road. Walgreens, located at 9141 South Broadway. Littleton area. Safeway Pharmacy, located at 8355 North Rampart Range Road. Lone Tree. Kaiser Permanente, in the pharmacy, located at 10240 Park Meadows Drive. Safeway Pharmacy, located at 9229 East Lincoln Avenue. Parker. CVS Pharmacy, located at 16920 Lincoln Avenue. Parker Police Department, inside the lobby, located at 18600 East Lincoln Meadows Parkway. Safeway Pharmacy, located at 11051 South Parker Road. Other disposal options. The state encourages people to not throw away sharps such as needles, EpiPens, and insulin, to find sharp collection programs or a way to properly dispose of them to avoid the possibility of transmitting blood-borne infections. Douglas County does not have sharps disposal locations, however. The CDPHE has a map with nearby locations that include facilities and nonprofits in Arapahoe, Jefferson, and Adams County, such as Upper Plaza at Little Dry Creek in Inglewood, and BHG Westminster Treatment Center in Westminster. In 2022, the CDPHE program collected over 1,500 pounds of needles. Another disposal option is utilizing a mail-in sharps container. These can be purchased with mail-in labels at some pharmacies, medical supply stores, and various websites. The CDPHE also offers directions for proper trash disposal if necessary. This includes using a sharps container, never paper or plastic jugs, and labeled sharps or biohazard waste. These are not recyclable. Not only could they pose an infection risk to workers at recycling facilities, but they can render a whole batch of recyclables unusable. Stalter, who is with the CDPHE, said when sharps are properly picked up, they are usually put under high heat to destroy pathogens and bacteria. Although there are national take-back days, residents are able to properly dispose of unused or unwanted medications and sharps at any time, even when running errands. It's easy to do, and they do a whole lot of good, Stalter said. Colorado partners with driving schools to educate teens about cannabis-impaired driving. DUIs include marijuana in addition to alcohol. The National Public Service announcement often heard during commercial breaks, "If you feel different, you drive different," could be dismissed as background noise. But to driving school instructors, law enforcement, and family members, it is potentially a matter of life and death. That's why the State Department of Transportation is partnering with driving schools across the state to bring more awareness to teens about the dangers and consequences of driving while high. Just one hit off a marijuana vape or something and you feel different. You're going to drive different, Mark Ashby, Colorado drug recognition expert, said. Even small amounts impair people. Before becoming a drug recognition expert with the state and a state coordinator for standardized field sobriety testing, Ashby spent about 3 decades as a police officer. 12 of those years, he worked on responding to fatal car crashes and had the difficult task of telling families that a loved one had died. With over 200 deaths in Colorado a year linked to impaired driving, Ashby said it's preventable, which is something driving school instructors in the state are educating teens on. Jake Dinwiddie is a senior instructor with Drive Safe Driving Schools. He has over a decade of experience and believes too many people have a habit of waiting for the bad thing to happen before they learn a lesson. Why wait for the bad thing to happen instead of realizing that all of the information and all of the data is out there, proving how dangerous it is? Dinwiddie said, expanding the outreach. When marijuana was legalized in the state, Sam Cole, Department of Transportation Traffic Safety Communications Manager, said outreach was originally geared towards adults. Now, officials are focusing their efforts on those under the age of legal consumption for cannabis. The state is partnering with drivers' education programs and the Colorado Department of Revenue's Division of Motor Vehicles in a Drive High, Get a DUI campaign, warning about fines and penalties. They need to understand at an early age, when they're learning how to drive or they just got their license, that DUIs involve cannabis as well as alcohol, Cole said. Throughout his years of teaching, Dinwiddie has noticed teens tend to assume that being high is not as much of an impairment as being drunk. A National Highway Traffic Safety Administration's drug and alcohol crash risk study showed that marijuana users are more likely to be involved in crashes as one of the effects of THC, a component of cannabis, hinders a person's ability to multitask. Some students at a drive-safe school in Highlands Ranch said they didn't understand the totality of the issue, one saying there's a lot of destigmatization around cannabis. Coverage tends to focus on drunk driving and emphasizing not getting behind the wheel when you're intoxicated, student Brandon Kiefer said. Part of their education process, State Department of Transportation officials conduct annual driver behavior surveys. The 2023 survey revealed that drivers ages 16 to 24 are the most likely age group to believe cannabis-impaired driving was okay. When Din Witty asked the students about the age to purchase and consume marijuana, some thought a person only had to be 18 to consume marijuana. However, the legal age is 21 or older to buy or use marijuana recreationally in Colorado. Even though it's illegal for them, teenagers, to consume cannabis, we know that some of them are consuming cannabis, and that's why we want them to know all the facts, Cole said. The effects of cannabis. Studies have shown that THC stays in the body system longer than alcohol, and it slows reaction time, reduces focus, and temporarily weakens problem-solving skills. People who drive high often have trouble knowing if they are staying in their lane and struggle to keep a steady distance between them and the vehicle ahead of them, according to the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. People also lose the ability to form short-term memories, added Ashby, a state drug recognition expert. When you're driving, short-term memories are remembering what the speed limit is, remembering to put your seatbelt on, remembering that there's a car next to you or that you have to get off at your exit, Ashby said. Those under the influence of cannabis tend to forget to vary their speed, said Ashby. So if they go from the highway to a more residential road, they may maintain the highway speed. Like Ashby, there are over 200 officers that are active drug recognition experts representing law enforcement agencies across the state. These officers, along with those who have advanced roadside impaired driving enforcement training, are able to recognize impairment by cannabis versus alcohol. The Douglas County Sheriff's Office currently has zero drug recognition experts, said Deputy Kota Hayden, a spokesperson with the Sheriff's Office. Since the beginning of 2024, there have been 86 DUI arrests made in the county, with the top age category being 25 to 34, according to the latest Colorado crime statistics. These numbers have steadily increased the past few years, with 297 arrests in 2023. When we look at a person, we look for impairment, said Ashby. The primary goal is never necessarily to place a substance with a person. Clear indicators may be the smell of the person or vehicle, but officers also look at the driver's eyes. Drugs such as antidepressants cause the eyes to move in a staggered way, whereas cannabis causes the pupils to dilate. Ashby said the roadside tests were designed to rule out medical conditions for the purpose of seeing impairment, and people under the influence of cannabis tend to forget some of the instructions. Drive Safe instructor Din Witty wants teens and adults to know how many levels of one's life a DUI could impact, no matter the substance. Instead of shaming people and just trying to scare them into not doing it, let's have good, open-minded communication and have you guys be truly educated on just how many aspects of your life it could impact in a negative way, Din Witty said. Consequences include possible jail time, a mandatory interlocking on vehicles, loss of license, community service and being ineligible for high school activities, college programs, or scholarships. Those affected in the slightest by drugs or alcohol can be arrested for a DUI, which can cost up to $13,500, or a DWAI, driving while ability impaired. Even medical card holders can be at risk. You can have whatever opinion on smoking, nicotine, or cannabis as you want, but behind the wheel, there's an obvious effect, and it's not something that you should be doing, student Braden Kiefer said. Thank you for joining us for the Arapaho County News. My name is Tim Elliott.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303-786-7777.